show that you know and possibly don't know and love and possibly don't love, which is known by the name Technology Bites, or whatever you prefer to call it.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to Technology Bites.
Oh, I can't even hear myself here. Have you got this microphone turned on? I think you do. I just need to turn my headphones up or something. That's what I need to do. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Barrett.
He's Flicked. He's...
Groove House.
Yeah, perfect show.
Yes.
Perfect.
Every week.
A+.
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 10 out of 10.
1,000. Come on, computer, work. All right, welcome to Technology Bites. We're so glad you could tune in tonight because it's Wednesday, and this is where you're supposed to be.
Listening to the show of shows.
The show of shows. Yes, Technology Bites. It's your down-home friendly computer discussion program technology thing that happens here, you know, for the last 20 years. You might have heard of it. I hear from people all the time that they've heard of it, but they know who it is or what it is and who does it, sort of, that Flicked guy. And, yeah. So, you know, we're going to just kick back. It's Wednesday night, 2 hours, technology. And we got our own technology that doesn't work specifically.
Yeah, we've got disconnected from server, reconnect.
Yeah, the phone software, we don't
manage. I haven't even checked it.
What happens if we click reconnect?
I think it's just your monitor.
I don't think you can click it.
I can't click that one.
No. Is it showing up on your screen?
Yes, let me see.
You can click it.
It's working on this side. Reboot your monitor.
Really?
I don't think that actually works.
I don't think
Thanks,
that works.
Thanks, though.
But.
Degauss it.
Degauss it. That's
De-gauss
what I need.
Degauss your flat panel.
Man, when. You know, I remember at one point in my life thinking I really, really needed a degaussing ring. You know, the kind. Have you ever seen
I've
one?
Never seen the big. I've only seen the button on the monitor.
No, the big ring that you get that you put around your monitor, and then you kind of shift it around until the colors fall into place. Wow. You hope.
Wow.
Yeah.
You could also do that with an electrical cord.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's plugged into the wall.
This might have just been electrical.
Got electricity. It actually does the same thing.
Talk about like hula hoop size thing, you know, like a media.
Yeah, that's probably the Jay's version probably does it much more uniformly. I think I killed a TV with a magnet or like, did we just cut out? Nope. Or with Flicted's method of doing it as a child, and that's how I saw a degaussing ring. Cause it
well,
had to be
I can tell you this much that I do know is that you don't have a lot of control with a magnet. But it will make a CRT turn pretty color. So if you want to try that experiment.
No, that's not permanent though, like it is in the old TVs, right? That'll actually like in the 70s, you could actually go and leave permanent purple patches on a TV.
I don't think it's a good idea to do a CRT in any capacity.
Don't do that.
But the idea of a degaussing thing is to like get the magnetism going through the monitor to pull the colors to the
but if
you put a magnet on there, it just like circles it all to one side. And you can just move that blotch around, but you can't like disperse the blotch. It may fade on its own over time, but who knows? So it sounds. I hear Pete in the background. Hey, Pete.
You did. Hello.
All right. So you can visit us online at geekradio.com. That's the website, and guaranteed to be up for the next couple of hours because Pete's right there, ready to reboot it. Should it act a fool again? It acted up last week, right after the show. It was funny, you know. It's working now, so go visit geekradio.com. You can also hang out with us on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com. I said irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
Man, you know.
It's a little thing.
I come to count on a few things, just a few. That was
where
one
is. Whoa. Where's that mic when you need it?
All right.
Where's Dooley when you need him?
Yeah, I need my parrot here. The technology bites parrot. That'd be awesome.
So pound tech bites in irc.cuckoo.com or website. If you don't know IRCs.
If you don't know your IRCs, you can use our IRC client at geekradio.com. Guaranteed the latest, greatest. That Java code is so old.
But the good thing is it's so old, no one's writing exploit stuff for it anymore. We've classed ourselves out.
Well, you know, just go to geekradio.com, launch the IRC client, change your nick, your handle to your social security number or credit card number, and it'll let you write in.
Yes.
No, I'm kidding, of course. Of course, there will be people who don't know that I'm kidding, but I'm kidding. Do not put your credit card number or social security number into the IRC.
Really don't put anything in IRC that you want anyone else to see. IRC is still a pretty big field for the underworld. I mean, the network we hang out on is pretty nice, but you know, if you go to Undernet or FNet, that's where all the bad hackers hang out.
Wow, FNet, the darknet.
The darknet.
All right, so if you want to be on the air with us, and we know that you want to be on the air with us, a little bit later on, we will be taking calls to discuss. Wow, the screen went completely blank.
Check video cable. We did unplug.
Is he rebooting the monitor? Awesome.
He's right. Doing something to it.
Do we need to shake the monitor, Etch-a-Sketch style? That may work.
Give me a magnet. All right, so if you want to be on the air a little bit later in the show, we'll be taking calls. You know, historically we've talked to people about, you know, fixing their hard drives or removing spyware or getting rid of viruses and that kind of stuff. But, you know, we can expand a little bit if you want to talk about, you know...
Politics.
Yeah.
Flicked will be managing the political discussion. Well, you know, maybe politics in regards to technology.
Do you see the new cover of the latest issue of Wired?
I did not.
It's pretty awesome.
What's on it?
It's a black and white of Edward Snowden holding an American flag. And I was like, wow, I wonder if they photoshopped that or if that's really a picture of Edward Snowden.
Is Edward Snowden really black
flag
and white in real life?
But I looked inside the magazine, and they actually did an interview with him, I guess, that's in the magazine, which I haven't read yet. I just got it and saw the cover, and they actually had a photographer in Moscow that went and shot the photos of him.
Oh.
It's a pretty cool cover.
He's been getting some decent press. Like, people have been sitting down with him and talking to him intelligently about things and not portraying him as this, you know, huge traitor.
Well, I actually went back and read the original full transcript of the interview from the guy from the UK that interviewed him, the original
the Guardian,
interview when it came out.
Reporter, I forget his name.
And
Glenn
it's funny
Greenwald.
Because if you read that interview, He asks the questions, and Snowden gives the answers that went on to be perpetuated attacks against Snowden for the next 6 months. Like the original interview answered all that stuff about, like, how do you think you'll be seen? How do you think the government's going to react? What do you think people are going to say about the fact that you went to Hong Kong? Like, all that stuff. And yet it was, you know, brought up and hashed and rehashed through the national media over the next several months.
Okay. All right, so I was going to say...
What can we talk about, Jay?
I was going to actually give out the phone number. That was kind of what the whole...
build-up was.
I was going to say, like, what else we could talk about.
You know, we could talk about Snowden.
Yeah, we can talk about the direct number to the NSA and Technology Bytes is...
713-526-5738, which we will be opening the phone lines up a little bit later. If you're Edward Snowden...
NSA agents are standing by.
And you
or Groovehouse.
If you'd like to tell your side of the story...
Call us.
Yeah, so... All right, so what we're going to do now, but, you know, be thinking about it. What would you like to have a conversation about on Technology Bytes tonight? Because we're going to open up the phone lines here in a little bit. But for now, we're going to go to San Antonio and do the Technology Bytes Info Shot with Peter Hughes. So take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Yeah, politics, privacy, whatever. We need to answer the really important questions like, are we living in a hologram? Yes, the Fermilab, scientists at Fermilab have come up with an experiment to find out for sure whether or not our 3D universe is a holographic projection of 2D sort of pixels of information. That's not made up. It's not something from from the Simpsons marathon that is ongoing. Yeah, so if you get bored with us, you can turn on the Simpsons. Anyways, the U.S. Department of Energy's Fermilab is conducts experiments in particle physics to delve into the origins of the universe, and now they are going to look into whether our 3D is any more real than your Nintendo 3DS's 3D. Basically... If space-time itself is a quantum system, just like matter, and can be analyzed all the way down to its smallest units, its 2D pixels of information should demonstrate the same uncertainty of matter's quantum building blocks, which can't have both their exact location and speed measured at the same time. So finding those smallest units is a matter of looking for how their quantum uncertainty disturbs beams emitted by Fermilab's holographic interferometer. Now, there's a neat product. That sounds like something that they made up on Star Trek to, like, resolve some particular, conundrum, like Heisenberg compensators. And anyways, holometer. Oh, they call it the holometer or holometer. They don't say how to pronounce it. If they can get rid of all the interference from other sources like nearby electronics, then they can look at the data that's left when they get rid of the disturbances that are around. And if there's any information still left there, it might be these 2D bits, according to Fermilab Center for Particle Astrophysics Director Craig Hulk Hogan, who developed the holographic noise theory. So, we'll find out, I guess. You know, it certainly will mean that you don't have to worry about... politics and that stuff if you're just a hologram, right? Anyway, this one, but here's another thing you can worry about. Have you wondered how many people look at your tweets? Publishers and verified users have been able to track view counts on organic tweets since last month, but Twitter wants to make that data more widely accessible. Today, the microblogging social network revealed that this analytics feature is no longer limited to people or companies who are the verified, who have the little check mark on their profile. The tweet activity dashboard is now also available to users who are active primarily in English, Japanese, and Spanish and have had an account for longer than 2 weeks. More languages are coming. Twitter let it be known that it's working to bring its tool to everyone soon. So now you don't have to wonder if anyone's actually reading your tweets. you can know how few people are reading your tweets, perhaps. But you'll know for sure if lots of people are, you know, that like that one tweet where you hit the viral jackpot. And this one, here's a cool one. This doesn't fit under cool new stuff, but I would put it under cool new techniques. This guy, 3D printing, we've talked about that stuff. Well, this guy came up with kind of the ultimate cool 3D printing project. He printed a concrete castle in his yard, 3D printed it. It took him 2 years and a precise concrete mix to produce the layers upon layers that he needed. According to MakeZine, quote, his printer is completely custom built and able to spit out concrete reliably thanks to tons of trial and error. His current settings give him layers that are 10 millimeters tall by 30 millimeters wide. He mixes his own concrete to make sure it's the exact consistency he needs to avoid clogging his print head. So, you know, what did you do this summer? This guy, well, for the past 2 years, he figured out how to print concrete buildings. Of course, could he have built the molds and poured the concrete and had it dry and all of that in less than 2 years if he'd done it the old way. But he did learn stuff. I mean, that technology isn't always about faster. Sometimes it's about doing stuff that's kind of cool. And not cool, though. This one's a tough one. HP. If you have an HP or Compaq laptop sold between September 2010 and June 2012, so that's people who have recent HP or Compaq laptops, you may need to swap out your power cord. HP has recalled the cabling for about 6 million of these, 5.6 million of which reached the U.S., after 29 incidents where the cord either burned or melted. As is usually the case with these kinds of programs, you just have to prove that you're using an affected system to get a free replacement cord. Boy, but so check on that one. Don't, you know, give a hoot, don't pollute, only you can prevent laptop fires if you have an HP or Compaq from September 2010. So check on that one if you have one. And now here's a whole slew of Apple stuff so that you can, you know, beat your head against the wall or tune me out or hum to yourself quietly or whatever. But we're going to go through them quick. We are coming up on, you know, there will be an Apple event in early September that should be, you know, that's going to announce something. So, of course, the rumor mill goes into overdrive. Here's one. You know, it's one of these where you kind of go, okay, who knows which one it is, but I'll report it and you can, you know, figure out what you think. Supposedly now, the September 9th iPhone event may also include an announcement of their wearable stuff. That the long speculated iWatch health and fitness wearable may be announced on the September 9th iPhone event instead of October, as was sort of originally anticipated. This is according to Recode's John Peskowski, or Peskowski. It's unclear if Apple changed its schedule or if October was just, you know, wrong or just a wrong rumor. In any case, the iWatch is expected to exploit not just HealthKit, Apple's health and fitness tracking platform, but HomeKit, designed to unify home automation technology. So the latter could allow people to control lights, appliances, or security systems from their wrist. Recode notes, however, that there aren't any specific plans. It may make sense to announce the iWatch alongside new iPhones, so maybe people would, because it's dependent on the phones, and maybe that would make people rush out to buy, you know, both at the same time. Didn't say that in the article, but that certainly would be worth speculating on. And another an interesting phone thing, since I mentioned phones, there's a Chinese repair firm called Geekbar that shared a claimed schematic for the iPhone 6, and what they think is that it shows an NFC, near field communications chip. That's the tap it to do your credit card thing, or, you know, tap it. That's NFC. And apparently the hardware stuff that's been released as rumors, and this schematic do support the idea that this may actually have NFC this time. There have been rumors of it for years, and they've never happened, so that's why there's been a lot of skepticism, although the volume and specificity of the rumors has seemed greater this time around. And since Apple's rumored to be making a push into mobile payments, it may be the time when they kind of need to do that. And then this one's for next year. It's not a it's a MacBook Air thing. Supposedly the thinner Mac, there's going to be a thinner MacBook Air coming near the end of this year, or a thinner MacBook, sorry. Thinner MacBook by the end of this year or sometime next year, according to a new report from Digitimes. They say that that according to supply chain sources in Taiwan, they say the component production's already begun in small volumes. In other words, they're already starting to work on a thinner one. Although, at what point does it become the MacBook Air Pro or something? The other thing in that report was that the 13-inch non-Retina MacBook Pro is probably going to stop being produced by the end of this year. And a report last month said that the 12-inch MacBook, I guess the 12-inch MacBook Air with a Retina-type display has been pushed back until late 2014, early 2015 because of Intel's delays with the Broadwell chip. And then the most rumory, I saved the most rumory and vague one for last. This one's come and gone multiple times, but now Bloomberg is claiming again that a new 12.9-inch iPad could join the current, you know, basically 10 and 8-inch models at some point early next year. It's been floating around for a while, but now it seems to have reappeared. Some of Apple's competitors are already making tablets around that size, including the Samsung Galaxy Note Pro and Tab Pro, and Microsoft's Surface Pro 3. You wonder, you know, I don't know if you've seen the commercials, but there's for the Surface where they're comparing it to the MacBook Air. I think because the price is similar, but this it would be because of the size, you know, that it's got a similar size screen and so on. That it would be sort of interesting to see Apple strike back with an iPad and compare that with the Surface. Although I don't think they would, because there aren't enough sales of these Surface devices to make that work. The Bloomberg report is reasonably specific about timing, saying that the new big iPad will go into production in the first quarter of 2015. Although even, you know, often when the rumors are correct about what the product is, they're often wrong on timing because, just to note, Bloomberg last predicted that the fabled iWatch would be released in 2013, which now it's, you know, here it is almost a year later and it hasn't been released. The rumors say that it could be as early as the 9th. So that's coming up. So, you know, a couple episodes of Technology Bytes and a geek gathering from now, we may know stuff about the iWatch. And then finally, on cool new stuff that ain't Apple, we'll go from small to large on cool new stuff. This one's sort of fascinating and cool. Intel has produced a 3G modem, you know, the wireless modem, that is only a little bit bigger than a penny. It's targeting the connected device market, otherwise known as the Internet of Things. You know, there's all that talk about the Internet of Things, but there's a lot of questions about how does the Internet of Things talk to each other or to the real Internet or any of that stuff. The device has a total area of around 300 square millimeters. Intel bills it as the world's smallest modem. It's based around what Intel calls power transceiver, a design that combines the transmitter, receiver, power amplifier, and power management in one chip. The design is also said to protect against overheating, voltage peaks, and damage from bumps and knocks. According to Intel, it'll work even when used in devices with antennas much smaller than those found in cell phones and will perform well even in locations where 3G signal is both weak and inconsistent. The maximum download speeds are supposed to be 7.2 megabits per second and uploads of 5.6 megabits per second, which is respectable, especially for something the size of a penny. So they're pitching it to manufacturers right now. They're aiming at two different types of device manufacturers. First, they said it's ideal for smartwatches and other wearable devices, you know, gadgets that need connectivity in a small form factor. See, this could mean that your future wearables down the road won't need a phone to talk to the internet. You know, right now they're all paired up, where it's your Android, you know, your Android wearable with your Android phone, you know, using your phone to get at the internet through that device, because obviously it's got the big transmitter and big battery and so on. Let's see. It's also hoping to find manufacturers to use the modem in remote sensors. VentureBeat gives the example of a farmer placing ground moisture sensors around his property and automating the collection of the data from the sensors. So, you know, typical or definite, you know, Internet O things equipment. And, gee, for the size of a penny, that works pretty well, and especially if it can get a signal, even if the signal's pretty weak. So kind of a cool thing. And then on the big side, this one's not so much physically – it's not physically any larger than the others. But, you know, you may have bought a 5-terabyte hard drive last week. You know, you spent the money, or I think there was a 6 that somebody had announced. Well, those are no longer the big kahuna of hard drives. Seagate has started shipping the first ever 8-terabyte desktop hard disk, doubling the 4-terabyte capacities that seemed huge only a couple of years ago. If it's any consolation, this is not being offered for your, you know, your home computer or your gaming PC. Right now, that's aimed at data centers, because capacity in the small space is the key. Where at home, you can just buy, you know, you can put 2 4-gigs for, I am sure, a lot cheaper. Seagate isn't mentioning prices, which probably means, if you have to ask the price, that you can't afford it. Enterprise class storage like this for data centers is rarely cheap. The thing about it is, it look to the future. If there's an 8-terabyte hard drive that's going into enterprise stuff right now, that means that in a relatively short period of time from now, you may have, if you need it, you may be able to have 8 terabytes of stuff on 1 3.5-inch hard disk. I'm Peter Hughes, and that's the InfoShot News.
I want an 8-terabyte hard drive.
I'm waiting for the 8-terabyte solid state drive.
Well, I do have an 8-terabyte drive, but it's 2 4-terabytes braided together.
Is it solid state?
No, of course not. I'm not made of solid state money.
Or 8-terabyte.
I want single drive. Probably. Yeah, no, not even that. Nope.
The Android wearables, I missed some of that. I was talking to Flicted and Groovehouse in there. Was that about the $75,000 prosthetic that was paired with the iPod Touch that got stolen?
No, I didn't do that one. What I was talking about with that was the new modem from Intel that's the size of a penny.
Oh, nice.
3G modem that's the size of a penny. So,
yeah, they need to change that. I know that like a lot of insulin pumps and even like some pacemakers report, you know, vital statistics about the patients back to doctors by pairing through like Bluetooth or Wi-Fi with, you know, like iPhones, and then, you know, uses the iPhone as the data link to get that data back. And that just seems like a weak point in the whole system. There are even some talks at Black Hat and DEF CON on how you could, you know, report, like, for instance, someone that had a pacemaker fault, you know, report back false information, say, hey, this person's heart stopped, and then the doctor, you know, gives authorization to trigger the defib, you know, and shocks them actually out of existence. So, yeah, getting dedicated radios is a really, really good idea.
Yeah, well, in the prosthetic arm thing, you know, I guess they can't really just do it where you can pair anything, you know, pair it like Bluetooth or something.
That story seemed a little sensational to me, because surely whoever developed that technology would make pairing it with another device a little bit easier. Like, surely they didn't, you know, like, embed this code that had, like, the Bluetooth ID only for this one iPod Touch and embedded it, you know, way deep in this titanium casing that cost, you know, a lot to replace. So I was curious as to what your take on the story was. That's why I was asking.
Yeah, that one I did. There was enough other stuff tonight that I didn't delve into that one. But you know, it's because the problem is it's done as a tearjerker story as opposed to a, okay, well, how does the technology work? Why can't they pair it with another, you know, with another phone?
I think someone mentioned that would be a really good model for like GM to do. Like, oops, you lose your car keys, got to buy a whole nother car. Sorry about that. They're tied together. That's how we designed it.
Speaking of Apple stuff, when I was traveling overseas, I noticed that my iPhone 5 was not holding a charge, and it was really frustrating because I mean it's not even 2 years old, and the charge was just ridiculous.
Did you figure out why?
I figured. Well, what was weird is I just figured. Well, I was not dedicated to the whole let it discharge, charge it up regime.
Charging
that,
cycle thing.
You're
yeah.
supposed you're not supposed to. Go. To.
Not anymore
to.
These days. You know, with lithium polymer.
Well. But, there's no memory, but they still you're supposed. I mean, they're supposed to. They're for good battery health. Apparently, you're still supposed to let it like you know go through so many cycles. But anyway, I blame myself. You know, I figure well, I just haven't been diligent in taking care of the darn thing and blah blah blah. So, I kind of wrote it off, and I figured well, the new phone will come out soon enough, and I'll get a new phone. But I thought well, that's going to really suck for the resale value of my phone. But I would like to be able to have it be functional, and just. Coincidentally, I just happened to look at my Twitter feed and somebody mentioned that Apple's doing a recall on the battery. So they're doing free repairs out of warranty. They acknowledge that there's a problem with some of their batteries. You go to their website, you put in your serial number, and it comes back and tells you whether you're eligible. So I'm getting a new battery put in my iPhone 5.
Excellent.
Which is better than the last when Apple also acknowledged that there's a problem with the power button. The sleep button on the iPhone 5, and they issued a recall or were, you know, offered to repair them for free. But I missed that one. I was out of warranty. My button stopped working, and I needed it to work. So I found it one of those strip mall place, Apple places. You know,
kind of work on your quote-unquote authorized Apple.
Yeah, you know, it was just a phone repair place with a guy with a pair of pliers and a screwdriver. And but he fixed the button.
This is iPhone 5 that they're doing the recall on?
Yeah.
As far as batteries go? Yeah. So people with poor battery life can...
So if you got poor battery life and you have an iPhone 5, not the C or the, any of the others, but if you have the iPhone 5, go and look. You can do iPhone 5 battery Apple, and you'll find their site, and you can put in your serial number and find out if your phone is eligible. I didn't, you know, even if I didn't have a problem. And also, now I need to figure out how to do that again. There is a diagnostic you can access in a web browser on an iPhone.
Ooh, like you put it in localhost and pull
yeah,
up
like
some
a
stuff,
localhost, and like you can pull it. Yeah, so I'm trying to.
Oh, you look. That's cool that Apple's actually owning up and doing the recall on the battery. They are notorious for not doing a lot of recalls, and maybe they should. Like, they still haven't done a recall for my O key. They're saying that's
my battery's not hardly any good on mine.
Here's like an iPhone 4S.
It's a 4S.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm probably going to have to. I'm probably going to go ahead and pay Apple to do it because the difference between the cost of doing it yourself versus Apple doing it isn't a whole lot. And
the risk
if they
is
do it,
high.
Then it keeps it under warranty. Yeah. And if it's messed up, they are responsible.
Yeah, before Jay said he was out of warranty on the button, I thought that he was going to be regaling us with tales of how he's, you know, replaced. He's getting an entirely new phone, one part at a time.
I'm doing that with my MacBook Air. My MacBook Air had a. Let's see, what was the second thing was the display went out, but the first thing was I can't even remember what the first thing was. It was two warranty repairs that if I had to pay for them would have been $500 a pop. So.
Wow, you did the extended AppleCare thing?
I did the AppleCare after the second failure because these both happened within 1 year.
Within the year? Oh,
within the first year, which was lucky. But I said, you know what? This, I mean, it's basically a new computer because it's got a new system board and it's got a new display.
The nice part is it's all the same computer. It's not like the Johnny Cash style, like the iMac AirBook Pro. amalgamation, yeah, one piece at a time.
I have the iMac. The iMac Air Pro with Retina.
And the camera protrudes from the out of the front of the.
Yeah, he still has an iCam.
One of the cameras does, but not the other two.
Because that's one of the rumors on the new iPhone 6 is that the camera sticks out a little bit, and there are people who are.
Like with focus, sure, like no. Not a manual focus, but with hardware focus?
Who's a manual focus?
Oh, and the show's back.
I think it's just that with making the phone as thin as possible, that then to have the setup right, then the lens is out slightly from the.
Yeah, I got so the phone's so thin that they actually had to make to get the focal point or the photography stuff they had. That's actually thicker than the phone thickness. That's actually kind of cool. So it's not like it's a ugly design thing. It's just the phone's gotten so thin.
Yeah. So, but it sticks out, which you just know is gonna. There's gonna be certain people who that will grate on them, like a like a missing tooth or canker sore.
Because when they put the case on it. It'll even it back out.
Yeah.
There you go.
Problem solved. Just buy a big case. So are we going to open the phone line?
Yeah, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. 713-526-KPFT. And we'd be happy to take your call on the air right here on Technology Bites. I'm trying to get into the diag. It wants me to put in a ticket number, and I don't think...
Oh, so you have to jump back and forth through some Apple hoops. So it actually communicates back to the Apple side, and the phone
I guess
says,
it does.
Yes, I'll show him, or no, I won't show him.
But they say on this website you can, you'll need to set default proxy Wi-Fi, say, IP address, your machine, and that. Well, that's not right. So let's see. So I'm still trying to sort this out, because it's very cool, but it did actually, when the tech did it on the phone, it showed that my battery was in need of service. So that was interesting. All right, 713-526-5738. All of our phone lines are open, and we would love to talk to you. So
do you guys use Secure Boot at work for the most part, like EFI or UEFI, Windows
no.
Secure Boot?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Why?
Because I've got it on this laptop. Like, I got a new, like, what is this, like, little Dell netbook, but slightly larger. And I dual booted with like a derivative of Gentoo Linux on there, and everything was all happy for about 2 weeks with the UEFI, and then 2 days ago it just disappeared, like it just vanished. So I can say secure boot, but it doesn't find any partitions like that. But if I do like an F disk, it's still definitely there. It's just that the BIOS doesn't pick it up. And all I've read about UEFI is that it's just kind of tough to deal with, and a lot of people haven't gone that way yet. So I was curious if you guys had. Maybe
no.
You could like lay some hands on the Dell, but no.
No, not familiar with it, to tell you the truth.
Don't go that
weird.
Way.
I messed with it a little bit years ago on my little Hackintosh, the Dell Mini 9 that I had, had the capability already, and that was why it worked as a Hackintosh. But it never had any problems. But I wasn't dual booting it either.
I wonder what the thinking is. It to keep like. Boot sector viruses out, or is it just to keep Linux out, or what is it? What's the purpose of secure boot?
I can
go Google this, but I mean, why? I know Microsoft was pushing it. Maybe was it because it was in an attempt to lock down all the DRM stuff? Like it won't boot unless it knows that you've got a secure BIOS. You're not going to be ripping video, coming in off HDMI. You're not going to be violating any kind of like,
This DRM? Of course, this is Microsoft. I found a webpage. Secure boot is a security standard developed by members of the PC industry to help make sure that your PC boots using only software that's trusted by the PC manufacturer.
Yeah, it's to lock out Linux, it sounds like.
So it, so it just sounds like another way for them to limit what you could run on your PC.
Yeah, it is not uber Linux friendly, I'm finding out. So I may just blow
this
the whole thing.
You said this is a Dell? Because doesn't Dell sell machines with
They used Linux? To. They did not so much anymore, and definitely not in stores. I needed a burner to take to DEF CON with me, so I just went and picked up. It's like a little Dell, like I think it's like a 3147 or something like that. It shipped with Windows 8, and it's not that bad, but it you can flip it around and it'll go into tablet mode, which is kind of cool. So, not too bad. Looks like we've actually got a call.
It does. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have?
All right, up first on the show, Technology Bites, where we talk about technology and computers and all that cool stuff.
Yeah.
We're going to speak with Alon.
Alon.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, you can avoid getting knocked off the air by lightning, which happened to connect the dots this afternoon.
Yeah. Well, you know, because we control weather.
Yeah, well, I've got my tinfoil hat on.
It won't be a problem for us.
Calm it down with the evening cool.
Although some might say it's a blessing in disguise.
Although the rain's coming through.
Yeah.
Later on tonight.
Anyway.
I'm sorry, we just got knocked off the air.
The show is called Connect the Dots. I do think that's tempting fate, electrically speaking.
Yeah, I've been following, working with Apple since the 1980s. And as you know, Apple kind of deferred over to Hewlett-Packard as far as letting them make printers that were Mac-compatible. And in 2003... Steve Jobs was quoted as, at that time, thinking that the mobile phones would not be important, but I think he changed his mind. But what I'm wondering about right now is, you know, for the past year and a half, 2 years, there's been more and more attention given to 3D printers, and even that is going to be quickly obsolete, because we have the concept of the 4D printer.
What is a 4D printer, I've got to ask?
Going beyond just reproducing a three-dimensional object, layer by layer, scanning it into existence, if you use materials in your composition that respond to the environment and can change depending on the environment, you have 4D printing, and there's all kind of ideas, both medical and for user wear, like shoes and things like that, that would change with the environment to respond to the need of the user and so forth.
But it wouldn't be continuously printing through time, right? Like it would finish printing it at some point, and it would be done, and then it would be the object's job to respond to
right.
Danger.
The fourth danger. Dimension is time.
Yeah, it looks like that's a marketing word. Like, hey, what's better than 3D? Oh, I know. Let's go plus one, 4D. So right. Yeah, I think what they're doing, this is like Web 2.0 style
yeah,
speak,
well,
but it's definitely taking it to the next level.
Agora, and also the Motley Fool is doing some videos on it. But the thing is, what I wanted to ask is, do you think that Apple will be wise enough to realize the implications of a home-based, you know, user-friendly printing device? Will they miss out on this because this is going to revolutionize manufacturing things in your home or on the spot, whatever, you know, it's just a tremendous change in the whole construction industry.
Actually, I've got a 3D printer in the home, and I will say this. I think it's going to be a while before everyone actually
it will
has.
Revolutionize it very slowly.
Very slowly. Yeah, it's going to be a while, and I think what's going to happen for instance, the way that, you know, 1 hour photo labs may have revolutionized, you know, and this is a while ago, like film cameras, where you could go and you can actually take your camera, film in, and, you know, have it developed and have it come right back. Not everyone went out and, you know, ran and said, hey, in my basement, I'm going to install a one-hour lab. Like, there were definitely hobbyists that could, you know, develop their own film, but it sped it up. And I think what you're going to see is, you know, services like Amazon, where you can, you know, do the designs, you can do everything you want to in your home, and then you send it to them, because right now what you're limited to is you're going to have to print with plastic. You're going to have to print with something. But you can send it to Amazon, and you can say, hey, I want it done out of this exotic material in this color with this finish, and it's going to be able to do a lot of things that a machine in your home might not be able to do.
I agree, and that's similar to the situation with printers now, is that the hardware is cheap, but they get you back on the supplies.
Yeah, and again, and the stuff we're printing right now, for the most part, it's, you know, it's not much more sturdy than what you would get if you melted up, you know, a lot of weed eater filament and you reconstituted it. You know, at least what is going on in the home. Now, there are printers now that are doing stuff with metal and doing stuff with, you know, you can actually, you know, some of the cool stuff is you print your 3D model, and then from that you make a cast, and then from that you pour in something really hard, and you can do something, or, you know, but I think it's going to go that way to where you can, you know, send it off and you go and you pick it up maybe that same day, or maybe you go down to your corner 3D printing store and you pick up whatever it is. But I don't think that everyone's going to have a home that has every single possible material to print everything they could possibly want to print.
Or an Amazon drone will fly.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, if the FCC would let the Amazon drones fly.
Well, 4D is on the way, and so is perhaps the next caller, but I thank you.
All right, thanks for your call.
Yeah, I think like FedEx, Kinko's, and some of those, you know, the service centers like that, business centers, some of them, a large number of them are starting going into 3D printers. I think I saw an article where they went with something larger. You know, they could have gone for the like cheaper end of the pool and smaller deal, and they took a risk and went with larger stuff and actually were getting a lot more people who needed it because they kind of thought through, you know, getting something that would do larger scale stuff.
Yeah, it looks like I'm doing some reading, and like the Smithsonian did have an article about 4D printing, but it's exactly kind of what we thought. It's just kind of a quasi-marketing term. It's not actually, it has anything to do with 4D. It's just they're taking 3D to the next level.
Because I figured it'd be that when you showed up, you know, hey, I'm going to print this out, and then you'd get there and it was already there.
Yeah, I was hoping we could print time
later,
and space.
Then later on, sometime when you really need the printer, it's going to actually be doing the job that it sent back in time to you when you got the first one.
Just about everyone with a home 3D printer has printed out a TARDIS. It would be really cool to print out stuff the TARDIS could fly through. But no.
Print it out where it's bigger on the inside.
Yes. Dude, there's the eighth Doctor, or the eighth season of Doctor Who is out, which I guess is technically the 11th Doctor. I don't know if I can do the math.
Yes, I think that's right. The 11th Doctor.
You mean the new season, the new Doctor?
The new Doctor Who.
The new one is the I guess by depending on how your count is, it's the 13th Doctor.
Well,
is
it the Doctor Who that that everybody's involved in right now that started with the guy right before David Tennant?
Oh yeah,
It was the reboot of the Doctor Who series,
yeah,
which is considered to be the new Doctor Who. So it's the new series.
He was eight.
He might have been eight or seven. But
the ninth Doctor was the first Doctor of the reboot, and his name was I think Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah, Eggleston or something.
Eccleston,
like that.
Yeah, something like that. So I'm getting close. That might not be his real name. Very close.
Right. But so yeah, so that is because Cynthia and I just started watching that. We were picking it up on Netflix and started there to kind of get us up to date. You know, I mean, I'm a fan of the 70s Doctor Who, but. And we may go back and see that. But the Doctor Who that all the kids are talking about is this new Doctor Who.
Well, he was young. So a couple.
Doctor Who.
Well, apparently there's a big, you know, like, oh, my God, there's an old guy that's Doctor Who now. And it make, you know, all these teenage fangirls that can't stand the fact that because they have teenage crush posters of David Tennant on their wall.
Oh, yeah.
But they're not going to be wanting to hang posters of the new one because he's old.
They went from the youngest one to the oldest as far as the actors playing them.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah, so there's a new season. There's actually a website, too, dedicated to spotting Doctor Who filmings in the UK.
So you kind of have to be over there, though, I guess, to do it. They do a lot of stuff. It seems like they do in little towns on location. They always have, like, the gratuitous shot of, like, Big Ben.
Yeah.
In the background or what have you.
In the big run-up to the new, you know, to the season opener for the new one, they had the fifth Doctor went looking for the ultimate Doctor. You know, what would the specifications be of the ultimate Doctor? And
the ultimate Doctor's companion?
Sort of a no, they weren't looking for the companion. It was the ultimate Doctor. And so he came to Houston, and apparently, I guess at one of the cons, there were three of the other Doctors were in town for it, and that's where he interviewed them in this BBC kind of documentary / you know, promo show.
That's what, if you like that, I think the same guy did an alternate take on that, where he also got some footage at the Houston con, where he was trying to figure out what makes the ultimate Doctor's companion. So he goes and he interviews all the old companions and some of the Doctors about, you know, what, you know, between Rose and between all the new ones, you know, what makes them, or what would make, I guess, a perfect companion.
I think it was Comic Palooza, I think. Is
that what was in town?
That had the
three or four doctors at it.
I can't remember, but the guys whose last name is Alderman was here, the brunette guy that is trapped at a fixed point in time and space and can't really die, the one male doctor's companion. Captain Jack Harkness is his name on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, Doctor Who calls too, 713.
No, but so there's that whole spinoff series, Torchwood.
Yeah, yeah, that's him.
Yeah. Captain Jack Harkness.
What is his name in real life?
That gay guy.
Is he gay?
The character is.
I thought the character would kind of sleep with anything, even aliens or, you know, forest creatures.
He was kind of a James Kirk type character.
Yes. Only nicer. He would call you back the next morning, maybe.
Let's see.
John Barrowman. Yes. Excuse me.
No, you're excused. 713-526-5738. What's your favorite doctor?
What dimension do you want to print in?
Four-dimensional printing. That's like quantum computing, right? It's like if you don't even hook the printer up to your computer. You just basically say file, print, okay. And then, like, at the time that you actually need the document, it materializes in front of you.
It's quantum printing. The problem is it's a sealed box, and you don't know if what you printed is in there or not. And
it may or may not be your boarding pass.
Until you observe it, you can't know if it's a live cat or a dead one or something.
It's like a Doctor Who badge wallet thing that he has where it's the proper credentials for whatever he needs.
Oh, psychic paper.
Psychic paper.
Yeah. You can, push your will and whoever. I guess, like, that's a low-key Jedi mind trick that, you know, only works on one thing.
Or a low-budget BBC trick.
Yes. Yeah, that's the thing. If you're into Doctor Who, you know, eventually you're going to want to go back and you're going to say, hey, I want to watch the early episodes because, you know, I really like the reboot.
You don't really
like
want to watch the early episodes.
Oh, my. Some of the super early ones are fairly painful to get through. You've almost got to watch them like early documentaries. Like, if you're interested to see what the early first generation Doctor Who is like, they didn't really have any morals. It wasn't all that charismatic. There were really no special effects and was really super dry. Go watch the very, very first season.
Well, they started showing some of those on the BBC on BBC or the Sci-Fi
channel. Some of the ramp-ups or on some of the documentaries about the Doctor.
And so they started showing some of the early 60s ones of the episodes, and they're really unwatchable.
Yeah. To me, Tom Baker, and even some
Tom
of those...
Tom Baker! That's the one I was trying
that's
to think
the, Yeah, that's the yeah. one. Long scarf, the super-duper, you know, wrap around your head and still hit the ground on both sides. Long scarf. That was when I was a kid on Sunday mornings, Sunday afternoons, when all we had was broadcast TV. That was the only thing that wasn't...
Age.
Yeah, it was worth watching. You usually come on after, like, Jason and the Argonauts or some, you know, like, kind of claymation Sunday morning special, Sunday matinee, and then, you know, Doctor Who would come on.
Hey,
I think
baby.
I like the music more than everything. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't eat that. Don't get in the van with the strange. I should have watched more of those, I guess. Yeah, in retrospect.
I don't know, Davey.
You should take better care of your keyboard, Davey.
Don't drop your cell phone.
Groove, where'd our calls go? We had calls.
They're coming in. 713-526-5738. Tom, I remember in the, it had to have been, let's see, are we having transmitter issues fading in and out? So thank you.
Whoa, I flicked it. That wasn't cool. Flicky was messing with her phones here for a second or two.
I don't know if we're having transmitter issues because I'm not out in the field listening, but, it's possible. I was talking to the station manager. We are having some issues. We get our signal from the radio station to the transmitter via the internet. So,
really?
Yeah. It's sent by IP because the microwave that we have on top of the building does not have a clear line of sight to the transmitter anymore like it used to. So it actually there's some building that recently went up.
Oh, wow. So we totally shouldn't have torn down the house next to the station. That was a bad move.
Yeah, so that's how we get our signal to the transmitter. And so, as you know, the internet here is kind of, you know, spotty a little bit. And, well, I'm sure that affects our ability.
Really? So 100,000 watts and all this huge metal stuff with guy wires and whatever, and it comes down to a so-so DSL line. Wow.
Well, I guess it could be worse. You guys are Comcast. There was a massive Time Warner outage last night, like just about everywhere. everywhere that they have service for up to 3 hours.
We're not Time Warner here. We're Comcast. But Time Warner, I don't think it affected Comcast, but I may be wrong. But
It did affect San Antonio, and it did affect on the East Coast a lot for Time Warner.
Did they say what caused it?
Routine maintenance, they said.
That's pretty routine stuff. For them, yeah. Hey, we're fixing it.
Oops. Yeah, I think that's filed right under the "he went for my gun" from the person who got shot by a cop. You know, it's like the standard excuse.
Right, it's the throwdown excuse whenever things are down.
Someone today was calling. I don't know if it was like the mayor of New York, but some high government official or high-ish government official was calling that all policemen should have to wear cameras. And his justification for it was that there are too many negative, like, YouTube videos coming out that only show the end of police beating up someone and not, like, what led up to that. So I'm kind of pro that. You know,
I'm
think they should be 100% accountable public servants on there the entire time.
Well, you know, then the cops that want to beat people up for photographing them just club themselves. Hey, stop filming me! Stop filming me!
Oh, I wonder if you could fake that stuff or get your partner.
There'll be a large number of ignorant cop shootings of redneck cops looking in mirrors.
Hey,
he went for his gun.
Pete, be careful what you say because we're the ones that have to walk out of the studio tonight. Okay.
I see a Vider sheriff's car circling the station.
Yeah,
I challenge all the Houston policemen.
How about a shout out of the San Antonio cops? Give me a second, I'll have an address for you.
At 10 o'clock, you can kiss my shiny bald head.
give you. Why are you on?
I'm leaving out the back door today.
Gee whiz.
You don't have to worry, Grewhouse, right? Unless you shave your
head. I'm walking
out
this front door.
because they're all such good shots. Oh, there will be no collateral damage. Just the fat bald guy gets shot. Flick is a little thin on top. He's got to sweat it a little bit. Did I get the right bald guy? Hey, you, come here. What? Did you autoplay a video?
No, that's us. That was us over a software-defined radio, which we'll bring out to the Geek Gathering, this thing.
Oop. Hey, check that out. I hear the warning signal. All right, well, listen, everybody. That's the first hour of Technology Bites, and what a great hour it was. But the next hour could be even better if you call in at 713-526-573. What do you got to talk about? You got a computer issue you want to discuss? You want to talk about the latest YouTube video you found?
Your love life.
Politics.
You're missing the old Doctor Who.
Whether or not you had I actually had the scarf that you could wrap around your neck and then it would hit the ground on either side made for me for the, in celebration of that Doctor Who, because Tom Baker was my favorite. All right, well, we're going to get out of here for a few minutes, take care of some station business, because it's that time.
And that's what we do.
And that's what we do. We always do what we do when we do it, for sure. All right, well, this is Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Grewhouse.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Lo que está escuchando no es su típica estación. Usted está escuchando Pacifica Radio. Estaciones en todos los Estados Unidos como esta dan una gran alternativa para escuchar. Aquí usted encontrará música como no otra, noticias y programación local. Pero nosotros damos mucho más que esto. Nosotros aceptamos personas de todas edades y culturas para que participen y sean parte de nuestra estación. Nosotros entrenamos nuevos voluntarios para que sirvan la comunidad y sean parte de ella por medio de este. Unas veces por año, estaciones de la comunidad piden su ayuda. Sus contribuciones nos continuarán a ayudar a pertenecer vivamente para los años que vienen. Pero no necesita que esperar. Puede hablarnos a cualquier hora y poner su contribución. Gracias por escuchar. Y no se olvide que usted hace este tipo de estación posible. Este mensaje es de parte de Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
Global warming, driven by agribusiness and big energy, is affecting all continents now. Corporations dump toxins into the oceans, creating dead zones that threaten life on Earth. Recycling and turning off lights may be positive, but what will truly halt the destruction of the planet? Deep Green Resistance says the current crisis demands we rise up now. Rather than ask, what will those in power allow us to do? Deep Green Resistance asks, what must we do to be effective? To stop the insanity, you can learn more at deepgreenresistance.org.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
Alright. So, some would say that the golden age of radio is dead. Maybe even some people in this very studio. But I'm here to tell you differently. The golden age of radio is just beginning. So up until now, all radio was hardware-based. Okay, if you wanted to listen to data encoded with frequency modulation, you had to buy an FM radio that contained electronic components specifically designed to tune in to decode a frequency-modulated signal. Same goes for AM radio. So whereas FM radio transmits data by changing the frequency of a radio wave, amplitude modulation means that the size of the wave has changed, or rather the troughs and the peaks of the wave. So you can go to YouTube to see a graphical representation of how this works, as I've kind of oversimplified them just a bit. The important part is that as simple as AM and FM transmissions may be, each of them require a different set of hardware to both receive and send data, in this case, sound. AM and FM also operate over very specific parts of the available radio spectrum. The bottom of your FM dial is probably around 88 megahertz, topping out at 108 megahertz, with AM running just for around, I think, 540 to 1600 kilohertz. Now, of course, this is just a tiny part of the spectrum. FM radio is actually tucked in between channels 7 and 8 of VHF television broadcasts, if you can just kind of imagine how much different stuff there is out there. For instance, then there are uber-specific radios that are capable of sending encoded digital data. One example of this is ACARS, or A-C-A-R-S. So ACARS, or the Aircraft Communications Addressing and Reporting System, which is also known as the radio system that keeps planes from crashing into each other midair. It's a digital data link system for transmissions of short messages between aircraft and ground stations via airband radio or satellite. So more or less, an aircraft actively broadcasts things like their registration, their identification, aircraft type, country of origin, altitude, latitude, longitude, speed, heading, and climb over 1,090 megahertz. So a little lower on the spectrum sits the 900 megahertz band where older cordless phones and garage door openers live. Higher up in the spectrum, we've got 2.4 gigahertz. So many of you may be familiar with that due to Wi-Fi. These are also very special radios, often coupled with an embedded microcontroller to handle the complexities of encoding mass amounts of information into a format suitable for radio transmission. So same radio, okay? So now, without the aid of specialized, often expensive equipment, we're often locked out of the information contained in the millions of radio waves bouncing off our bodies on a daily basis. So in the example of ACARS data, a hobbyist learned how to decode these messages years ago, but until now it required gear that cost several hundred, if not several thousands of dollars. So why, quote unquote, until now? Because we're undergoing a fundamental move from hardware to software-defined radios. Now, software-defined radio, or SDR, first showed up in satellite modems. So because the gap between radios here on Earth and the radios in near-Earth orbit, which are in the satellites, contains so much moist air in between the two, we needed a way to change the signal strength of the radios based on the humidity of the air and the air temperature. So rather than have a room full of radios with every possible radio, certain aspects of the radio were offloaded to configurable hardware, which then gave way to being able to define these components in software. So SDR has been around for a while, but it's always been expensive. That is until a small company made a massive run of USB dongles designed to tune in satellite TV broadcasts in a few Asian markets. Rather than build an expensive hardware to do the tuning and decoding, the designers instead chose to catch as much radio signal as they could and then just hand it off to the computer to deal with. So that company has since gone out of business, but a number of the USB sticks can still be found. There are also a ton of copycat sticks that work just as well, especially if you're willing to wait a week or two as they ship from China. Most of them can now be found under the RTL-SDR moniker. So that's RTL and then SDR, like software-defined radio. So here's the cool part. You can, through USB connection, tell this satellite TV decoder stick to tune, for instance, to 90.1 FM, and then feed that data into a program that knows how to deal with FM demodulation, and then feed that demodulated data into something like your PC sound card. What do you have? You've got an FM radio. Sounds kind of complicated, but it's actually not that hard, and you could do nearly the same thing with AM radio. ACARS data, the flight data, same thing. In fact, you can even take that data and plot it onto a map for a real-time view of the sky and the airspace around your home. And with airports on both the north and south sides of town, Houston is an excellent city for this. And these are just two examples of what you can tune in and decode with software-defined radio. An open-source software package named GNU Radio, GNU Radio, lets you build radios and software just as if you were ordering parts out of a ham catalog, all without the expense and the two-week wait. There are also a number of hobbyist boards available once you exhaust the possibilities that the RTL-SDR has to offer. There's the Blade RF and the Hack RF are two notable examples. They're open source, I believe, for the most part, and they are hacker-friendly. Unfortunately, I don't have either one. I do have a spare RTL-SDR, though, and we'll be tracking aircraft and tuning in 90.1 FM KPFT from Cones at the September Geek Gathering, which is happening 1 week from this Friday. We'll also bring out some Wi-Fi gear that can do some neat things with the wireless chipset that also offloads, maybe wisely or not so, it offloads most of the processing to the computer, allowing us to do things that most other wireless devices can't. All this happens next Friday, September 5th, but for now, that's it for your Acorn of ACARS knowledge, and that's that for Barrett time.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. I'm not sure how the signal's going. Barrett pulled it up on his software radio, and it sounded like we were broadcasting, so we may be reaching. I can't tell. If you can't hear us, call and let us know.
It sounds good from in here, Jay.
Sounds good
from hear you like you're just right next to me. It's pretty amazing.
It's the quality and clarity is stunning, and there is no delay when you're talking to me. 713-526-5738. I do know that my internet connection is acting pretty wonky. I'm not getting good steady connection here in the studio. Ha! So, Pete, you going to come down for the Technology Bytes Geek Gathering next Friday?
There's a real possibility I could, because I thought it was going to be this Friday, obviously missing the whole first Saturday thing, that it's not really the first yet on Friday, but I could potentially make it.
Is this a holiday weekend coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a long 3-day weekend. Labor Day.
That'll be good. I'm looking forward to having some time off after my vacation.
Yeah, what did you do to Iceland?
I know.
It's like the volcanoes are like connecting to each other.
You have angered the old gods somehow.
Yeah, that's the latest news on the volcanoes in Iceland, or the volcano in Iceland, is that the magma intrusion is now joining up with the other volcano next to it. So there may be a little bit of a volcano fight going on. Fight!
Put it on the internet, volcanofight.com. Get someone to tattoo it on their forehead. Volcanofight.com.
Who's tattooed what on their forehead that led you to that?
Oh, back in the day, they did bum fights.
Bum fights?
Yeah.
And somebody tattooed it on their head?
For money.
Oh, I remember that.
That 19th hole or 19th tee or something, the gambling site, they did a lot of that stuff, like weird stuff.
Odd things to bet on.
Changing their names. Legally
naming
to
their
get
children.
Money, naming their children, yeah. Tattoos.
Weird stuff. Know your memes.
Know your memes. There is a there's a website called knowyourmeme.com. So you can actually look up the history of various internet memes.
Why look up memes?
If colleges are still around in 5 or 10 years, 15 years, I bet there will be like a meme class that'll eventually be like, you know, if there's a history in rock and roll now, there will eventually be a history of internet memes. Or they'll probably dress it up like early internet culture or early digital culture, or, you know, like throw some more syllables in there, but it'll be taught.
I actually read an article recently that was talking about the fact that people born before around 1985,
who always have always known the internet, or
they're going to be the last generation that will have known what the world was like before the internet. Like, it will be the only generation that age range will be the only generation that can cross the barrier from pre-internet to post-internet and be able to like compare the difference between pre and post.
We're going
to
be like the last generation that knows how to spell correctly. The long form.
Yeah. They're also the last generation that knows how to tie a laced shoe and read an analog watch.
Well, some things are going to preserve the old ways. I mean, look at schools. How long have we had, you know, laptops have been affordable for people for a decade now, really, you know, where regular normal people could afford a laptop at least. You know, there's iPhones and all that other stuff. They finally have bring your own device now at the high school.
That sounds dangerous.
Well, I mean, obviously they have limitations on, you know, they have things about how you can use it and that, and they're not, I don't think it's like, it's not open internet or anything like that, but they are at least acknowledging that you can use these technologies to take notes or to, you know, to do things that help you accomplish what you're doing in school.
No, I'm pro that. I just wonder, like, how much, you know, how many high school kids are running stuff they shouldn't be running on the networks, and, you know.
Well, some of it, you know, they can't really. You think about how many high school kids have smartphones, particularly. I think the iPhone has been a pretty wanted thing, where they presumably most of.
Wow.
I think the teacher just took Pete's phone away.
Have their own data plan, so they don't even have to worry about the local network.
Network fight.
Network fight. IP fight. Packet collisions. Sunday. Pete, we've lost you.
I think it's going in and out.
It is going in and out.
Just like our
That's
signal.
That's what she said. 713-526-573. What, too soon?
Show just got racy.
It was an office quote.
Oh. I mean, if you want to call in about things about that.
Dr. Simona will be right along. Her health. All right, 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We are taking calls to be on the air and discuss technology. We have about 45 minutes left in the program this evening. So if you'd like to participate, we're discussing all manner of topics, 4D printing, Doctor Who.
Software-defined radio.
Volcanoes.
Even. The government does not like, FCC specifically, does not necessarily love software-defined radio. And that's mainly because, you know, before, like, for instance, if you wanted to, like, you know, get a military radio or go get a GPS radio, you kind of have to, like, go through military channels and get, you know, a radio that I'm sure someone has to sign for and is very controlled and they've got serial numbers and, you know, they make sure they don't go to, you know, countries that aren't uber friendly with the U.S. Now, you could, you know, someone with a little bit of time could just, you know, work on this and probably decode some of it. And then once it's out there, it's just like a software program. It's, you know, kind of like what this is doing is, you know, how back in the day when you had music, and if you want to trade music or do things like that, you had to have a record or have a tape. And tapes are when things kind of got neat. So think of tapes as like maybe citizen band radio when people could, you know, like have a little CB in their car. This is kind of like MP3-izing radio. It's making radio to where anyone, if you wanted to do your own pirate radio thing, it would be extremely easy to do. And it's hard for governments to control now.
Can you... So does this antenna design capture all frequencies? Or
no, so,
is it that you have to define the frequencies?
Oh, no. So
the way
that it works is, like, this little antenna that I'm holding up, which is literally, like, it looks like a USB jump drive, like a little memory stick, with a little antenna that's made, a little whip antenna, maybe 3.5 inches, 4 inches, that's on a magnetic base. this will tune everything from like maybe like, you know, 100, couple hundred megahertz all the way up to like maybe around, you know, a little above 2.4 gigahertz. You could pick up Wi-Fi with this. You could pick up Bluetooth. You know, you can pick up, definitely pick up aircraft. You can pick up garage door openers. You can pick up baby monitors. Old cordless cell phones, which you shouldn't do because I think that might
megahertz.
Be illegal. Yes. You can listen, but so that's the thing. And so this, and like I said, these you can get, I know we're not supposed to talk prices, but you can, you know, you get a couple of these for a $20 bill pretty easily if you're willing to wait for them to come through. So it's really revolutionary as far as price goes. It's a lot of fun for
Are there different antennas you can hook up that cover different frequencies better?
So, yeah, a little bit. So the idea is this pops out and you can hook up whatever external antenna you want. And then for a little bit more money, there are a couple of projects. The guy that made the Ubertooth 1 is doing something, and his will actually, it can sample as low as, I think, like 40 megahertz. So that means near-field communication stuff. So like, you know, what Pete was talking about in the news. If you can get, you know, you have this thing in your backpack, and you get close enough to Pete, you know, tapping his phone up against, like, a pay station, you can decode that. Or like a code tag, you know, someone going in like an IT door, you know, like secured access door, you get an antenna up really close to that, you can decode that. And it'll decode all the way up to, I think, like 6 gigahertz or 10 gigahertz. And those are like, you know, like ultra, ultra high frequency stuff. And that's, it's actually not UHF. UHF is actually pretty low down in the spectrum, but it's stuff that could be military graded, stuff that could be like marine communications, it's satellite communications.
So if you hook up a, like a mile long antenna, you can get like, down to like 8 hertz.
Oh yeah, and that's what people are doing. Like these, I think they're called like long wire antennas. They're like, you know, they'll take this thin wire and loop it all the way around their attic, and it's a very slippery slope, but it's kind of neat. I know a lot of some of our Friday night Geek Gathering crew, when we were in Vegas, they got their ham licenses, so you might also see some of their radio gear out. But yeah, I think that's kind of the next thing. It's like it's like when people used to build LANs and build home networks. It's like that a little bit on the other side because, you know, then you could build wireless LANs and you could build things like that. But now it's very easy if you want, as a hobbyist, if you want to build, like, do packet radio stuff or, you know, just go spectrum hunting, like go listen to see what's out there. You know, it's kind of fun. So, you know, plus, you know, it just like I said, anything that's radio based. So police scanners, fire departments, plane to plane, aircraft communications, you can hear what like the planes are saying to the tower control, you know. Like I said, everything that's out there that's a radio wave, with these radios, you can pretty much get into.
So can you use it to do frequency scanning?
Yeah.
To do the entire range of what the antenna covers?
Yeah. Yeah, you sure can.
Whereas frequently, and previously people would have to have like a physical device that was like a police band scanner.
Oh, no. So what you can actually do with this, like with GNU Radio, and there's actually a Windows program called that's free that's called SDR Sharp. Because I think it was coded in C#. You can actually, so you plug in whatever radio you want to. There are a lot of different radios you can get. Like I said, you can spend more money on this if you want to. You plug it in, and you can actually see, like, you can say, like, hey, show me whatever spectrum this device will show. And you can see a graph of the entire thing. And then you can also see a waterfall graph of the entire spectrum. Now, one of the downsides to software-defined radio is that it is because you're sampling such a wide swath of the spectrum. You don't see really sharp spikes, but, you know, it's still enough to see, like, hey, there's something, you know, around this band, there's something around this band. And then when you zoom in, you can always go get a frequency manual and see what's assigned and then go fishing in those specific points. But, yeah, if you're sampling 10 gigahertz of spectrum, those spikes are going to be pretty tiny just because the landscape is so large. But still, just if you want to come check it out, we will definitely have it out a week from Friday at the Geek Gathering.
Yeah, when you get done with your big party weekend... Work your 4-day work week, come back and have some brews or some wine or just hang out in general.
Should be the last hot Geek Gathering.
Yeah, it's the last of the summer Geek Gatherings, I suppose. Summer comes to an end sometime in September.
It wasn't that hot today.
No?
It was kind of nice, but there was some rain that cooled it off in the afternoon, and I think we got like some threat of rain this evening, and then Eric Berger was saying something about a low pressure system hanging out in the Gulf that might come and see us tomorrow, dump some rain on us.
It's supposed to rain tomorrow, right? That thing's heading our way.
Yeah, tonight and tomorrow.
Okay.
Although I have not consulted the internets to see if that's changed.
I'm hoping it doesn't start until around 11 p.m. tonight.
It'll probably start at 9:58.
All right, well, it's awfully quiet out there in Radio Land. 713-526-5738 if you'd like to be on the air with us. If you've got a pressing computer issue that you're trying to deal with, we'd be happy to give you a hand or try to help sort that out.
First memes. Do you remember your first meme?
Dancing Baby.
That was mine. Yeah, Dancing Baby.
That was mine too.
And I knew it was a thing because I was working on an internet provider and everybody was watching it, and it showed up on Ally McBeal, which was the first TV show to capitalize on an internet meme. I think.
Wow.
Might have been the first one because it was so prevalent. Everybody was downloading that damn Dancing Baby. And who knew that right behind that were billions of cats? Billions of them. Because the internet.
Carl Sagan knew.
Carl Sagan knew that the internet was
billions
made of cats.
And billions of cats.
Billions and he billions of one. Cats. Yeah, well, you know, Dwight Silverman's doing his best to contribute to that. I went and looked at his Instagram feed here recently, and it was all cats. He's going to have the best documented cats, you know, in terms of his. He got them when they're kittens. The only thing he's missing is birth photos of those cats, but he's got every.
Oh, I bet he'll have a litter soon.
Ooh, that would be interesting. Not really, but.
No.
All right, 713-526-5738. I see a call coming in, so that's good news. We've got plenty of open lines. We've got plenty of time here on Technology Bites. If you want to be a part of the show, we'd love to have you. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Gus.
Gus, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, Jay. This is Gus. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. This is my situation. I have a computer, and I removed the hard disk. I put an SSD.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to my other computer where I have an 8.1. I can make two copies of that. And so I made a flat copy on a USB, and I was trying to boot it. I can't do it. I don't know why.
You were trying to boot into the copy that you made?
Right. I made a flat copy of the 8.1 Windows on my USB disk.
What do you mean a flat copy?
Well, I saw that in the YouTube. You take a copy of the Windows. Mm-hmm. And then you copy it on your USB disk, and you take the USB disk from that computer, working computer, and you put it in the new computer, and I try to boot it.
Well, you have to
boot drive.
A flat copy, or if you just simply copy the contents of a... Are you copying the contents of your Windows directory, or are you copying the contents of a Windows CD onto the thumb drive?
I copied the contents of the Windows CD onto a desktop.
Okay.
And then I transferred it over to the USB.
Right, but the thing is that the USB has to have a boot partition for it to become bootable.
I know, I've said that. I cannot make a partition on a USB.
Well, you know, you have to make the USB bootable, so I'm not sure exactly how you do it, but there should be instructions.
You can do it by hand. I want to say that there are, and I know there are for Linux, but there are some scripts and some programs that make creating bootable USB sticks pretty easy.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking to see what there is for Windows because all the ones I'm familiar
with. I'm not sure.
Can I buy one like that?
Well, you'd have to actually make it bootable by putting a system partition onto the USB drive.
All right, here's what you search for. And Windows actually has, like, you know, technet.microsoft.com has a library article about it. And the search that I got there was create USB bootable drive Windows 8. And if you want to put in for bonus, you can put in WinPE. So Win Papa Echo.
Oh, okay.
And it was done December 9th, 2013. And it shows you, so apparently Windows PE is what's going to let you boot from that, copy the files over, and it'll show you how to do what you need to do. There's a little troubleshooting section, so hopefully that will get you where you need to go. And actually it tells you, you've got to type in like disk part and then list disk, and it does it for you. And it says select disk and then clean and then format, label.
Well, they're
Windows
also
A
talking about.
I know that step.
Now I'm seeing,
but
also,
I didn't know
where
how to go get to do that. Yeah, okay.
If you wrap up the Windows 8 install CD and you make it into an ISO image, you can then write that ISO image out to a thumb drive, and that would make it bootable.
Well, are you trying to boot into like a persistent copy of Windows 8, or are you just trying to boot so you can now install it onto a system?
Right, right.
Which?
How do I make an ISO image of the 8.1?
Well, there are different tools that will let you do that, different DVD burning tools. I'm not sure which one you have, but if you Google search how to install Windows 8 or 8.1 from a USB device, and you'll find instructions that talk about all the different options and different ways to do that. And there's a, I found a website at pcsupport.about.com using that search term, and they've got step-by-step instructions on how to either make an ISO, or if you have an ISO already, sometimes it's provided. But it talks about different ways how to install Windows 8 or 8.1 from a USB. It tells you it has a clickable link for how to create an ISO image from a CD, or you actually do that inside of Windows has an option to take that disk and create an ISO.
Okay.
There's a program called Burnaware free, but if you actually just, I could tell you all this, but you're going to find it real quick if you just, you know, hang up the phone, go to your computer, Google search.
Uh-huh.
What I just told you, the Google search.
I will.
Find it.
I always do.
Okay.
Super.
All right. Good luck. Appreciate the call. Thanks. Yeah. So yeah, it's a rather involved process. What you're going to do is you want to pull up a web page that basically walks you through it. And this one has screenshots and all of that. It gives you step by step how to make a bootable USB. And then you can use that USB to boot up your computer. Alternatively, if you have the Windows 8 CD, you could get an external USB drive and boot from that on that other computer, just install it right from the CD. You don't have to go through all the rigmarole of trying to do it from a USB disk. I mean, that's certainly an option for you. I know it's my only option for my MacBook Air is to install from a USB. But if you have an external CD or DVD drive, you could boot from that, and that would let you do it as well. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. We've got about a little over 30 minutes left in the program, and we'd be happy to talk to you. And, you know, another thing on that previous caller I should mention, too, is that if you've already installed that Windows 8 on a computer, you're not licensed to install it on another computer, so you may run into some challenges there if you try to activate that copy of Windows, because one disk, one computer.
They're locking it down, and they check immediately online, too, don't they, for the most part? Can you snooze it for, like, 30
days?
You can
snooze it for 30 days, yeah, until you get your proper key.
Now, are they already coming out with Windows 9?
I heard some rumblings about that. Windows 9 is, they're talking, let's see.
Pete, you have a line on that?
I just saw it mentioned release date news and rumors on Windows 9. Let's see. It seems that they're saying as soon as September 30th.
There's no way. That's really sneaking on an operating system without a whole lot of fanfare or anything else. Very quickly on what I feel is on the heels of Windows 8.1. Although, I guess not that long. It's been out a year and a half, 2 years.
Right now, we expect to see Windows 9 in a preview build as early as September.
Oh, preview build. Okay. That's a lot different.
That would be the hype you're looking for. The entry point to hype on a new operating system would be the preview build.
So they're ramping up. So probably like late 2015, huh?
I was just getting used to Windows 7. Now they got to do it. It's Windows 8 and 8.1.
I like 7. 7's kind of where my groove is right now. Like, yeah. That's what I run it with. My one Windows box has 7 on it.
It's the XP of Windows 7s or something. You know, Windows 8 is the Vista.
7's the new XP.
7's the new XP. It kind of is. People would be happy. You know, people that were lamenting that they didn't like Windows 7 are really upset about Windows 8. So, I look forward to that batch of calls and emails as people try to embrace the new operating. I wonder if they're going to, how quickly they'll end the life Windows 7. Don't know.
Hasn't they already announced that?
Windows 7 EOL? I'm sure they've at least guaranteed how long they're going to support it through, but I don't know if they've actually called it EOL. Let's go see.
Yeah, let's go look. We got the internet. Windows lifecycle sheet. Let's see. End of mainstream support, January 13, 2015.
That's pretty
soon.
For Windows
7.
they probably said, like, look, we really messed up with XP. Let's never again ever say we're going to support an OS more than 3 years.
Saying Windows 8 end of life support on extended end of extended support is 2023.
That's a little more like it. Windows 7 end of extended support 2020.
2020 extended
support.
Extended.
Yeah. Regular support's 2015. So when is the next Mac OS supposed to release, most likely?
Pete, have you heard anything on that? I mean, you talked about it at the last
end of the year
developer thing, but when are we expecting Mac OS X?
10.10?
10.10 or something.
Is that Yosemite, or is that already out?
No, that's Yosemite, I believe. No.
Mavericks is the current.
Yeah, Yosemite is the new one that's coming out. So that is the 10.10. I don't know if they're going to call it 10.10 or what they're going to call it, right? I've heard Yosemite, but I've also heard they're just going to call it, like,
double X.
Something double X. Double XL. Triple XL.
Followed by comic book guy.
Worst operating system ever. All right. 713-526-5738. It's awfully quiet out there in Radio Land, so where are you? If you want to be on the air with us tonight, if you have a question, a comment, what operating system are you looking forward to? Are you looking forward to Windows 9? Looking forward to Mac OS XX? I mean, I'm interested in a new Mac operating system. I'm also interested in a new iOS. I wouldn't mind that. A new operating system.
That should be
so when you say new, like how new, do you want like super brand new, life-changing, like give me my one button back kind of with iOS stuff? Or do you just want like some nice improvements on iOS? iOS to me seems kind of like, what else can they do with it? It seems pretty kind of mature.
Oh, it works, you know? Great. It does everything I need it to do, but I'm just, you know, I want to have the operating system as new hardware experience. You know, instead of buying a new phone, I just want to have the, I like to update my operating systems now and again. At least in the Apple world.
The big thing that's coming is connectivity, where you can start something on your iPhone and finish it on your iPad or move it to your desktop or your
portable apps. Are they actually going to be like transferring running processes, or is they just going to put everything in the cloud so you kind of detach from like an instance on the cloud from here and then you pick it up somewhere else? Kind of like
how
screen
works in Linux. I would bet the latter, because that's easier.
Everything's going to the cloud. Flicted likes that, though, I bet. He likes the cloud.
I like it when they use cloud to mean something than the internet.
The cloud.
Well, you know, I do...
Like the internet, but better.
I do support for some businesses that are, you know, all Apple kind of places. And with now that people have gotten to the latest operating system and all that, when I set up a new computer for somebody who's already got their iCloud, basically once you put in their iCloud, you know, login and password, it picks up all their email logins and passwords and their bookmarks and all those kinds of things just immediately. And it's pretty sweet.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing for me, like, I don't think anybody should be able to call something cloud or cloud-based or anything unless it is across multiple data centers in geophysically separated locations. And can automatically move from data center to data center without any human intervention at all whatsoever. If you're not doing that, then you're on the internet.
Well, unless
you
you're
have
a weatherman,
server on the internet.
I don't want to hear you talk about cloud. And even then, they're wrong about clouds most of the time, I notice.
And now, I guess because of software-defined radios, now that's becoming a big buzz phrase. So you have software-defined network, software-defined... data center.
They're always that's what VLAN is. That's what a lot of this stuff is, software defined. It's just like, just
really,
take the obvious and call it the obvious.
What they're really doing is they're, what it really is automation.
Buzzword coattailing is what it sounds like to me.
Kind of. I mean, because the idea is that, so they've already virtualized servers, right? We've had VMware for a long time and they've virtualized servers.
Yes and no. Yeah.
So now the idea is that It's adding orchestration and automation on top of that, so that without any human intervention, the software scans and sees that something's going on, and so it kicks off automatic processes that can spin up new servers and like pull in resources from unused.
It's scaling. It's an issue of scaling, really.
It's automated. Yeah, orchestration for scaling. Scaling up and scaling back down. So when the demand, the mass crowd goes away, then you can spin all those back down. And before you spun them up, you actually took, like, let's say you have dev space and you've got like 100 dev systems. Well, your production server, somebody, your stuff goes viral. And so this system would automatically back up all of your devs, shut them down, create new virtual web servers, spin them up, give them IPs, configure your load balancing systems to put so that they're behind that, set all that up without any human intervention, and then when your traffic goes back down, it automatically will spin down all those VMs that it spun up, delete them, and then pull all of your dev systems back off of of backup status and make them live again. It's like using Puppet or any of those kind of like automation orchestration tools to try to use software to keep humans out of having to you know,
mess with the OS. Well, I keep seeing all these things about saying, like, you know, the operating system doesn't matter anymore, but what do you run these cloud servers on? I mean, the operating system, I think, is more important than ever, and if, especially now that it's holding up these much larger loads with all this virtualization, I think if we say, like, hey, don't worry about the operating system,
see,
it's going to come back to haunt us.
I think what they mean is that it's not important to the
end user. Yeah.
The end user doesn't care about the OS because all they see is a GUI that gives them basic functionality similar to having a smartphone or something. And a smartphone, you as an end user, you don't care about the OS. I mean, it's there, it's running, it's doing stuff, but you're just interacting with this, you know, like GUI layer, and you don't get below that much. And I think that's what they're trying to do now with web services and stuff, where everything the end user sees is all in a GUI layer. And sure, there's some people in the back end that are doing OS and networking and stuff like that, but it's a smaller number of people, and everything else is automated.
Yeah,
and orchestrated
application hosting. So yeah, it kind of went from like, hey, you don't even have to like maintain your own servers or have your own server space anymore. Come get a cloud server. Come get like an instance in the server. And now kind of this next wave, at least what I'm seeing, is you don't have to, like, if you want to run like say like a PHP application, you don't have to go get a virtual PHP server from like Amazon or from someone. You can go to something like Heroku and actually spin up just that application. You upload your PHP code, it does everything else for you, to where you don't even really care about that. But the danger is, I want to know what's going on behind there. And, you know, with the, we, you know, Felicted works with sensitive data in his line of work. You know, we work with, you know, attorney kind of privileged data. So, you know, just due to like a lot of contracts we have in place, we can't let third parties get a hold of that data. So we're locked out of the cloud just by sheer contractual reasons. And, you know, we don't go to the cloud just because I've got some concerns, because if I can't see what's going on with a lot of it, I don't necessarily trust it.
Some concerns for the area I work in also is, once you get into the cloud, where is it?
Mm-hmm. Physically.
Not physically, yeah. So not just, you know, it's not just like, well, I don't know where it is. I need to feel comfortable to know where it is. It's like, no, if it's being distributed across multiple data centers and those data centers go into other countries, it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
Because then that data is at rest in another country where there's different laws.
Yeah, we've also got physical access. I mean, we've got like, you know, you've got to have these locked and the data centers have to be locked and controlled access. And, you know, the second you don't know where that data is, you no longer know if you've got controlled access. You've got no idea who's, you know, physically touching the box where all your company's data is. And also, too, I think, you know, if I was going to be like a nefarious, you know, like bad actor, like bad hacker guy, I would go after the cloud services and get in the control system somewhere where I could just skim from instance to instance and grab whatever I want, and they would never, ever know.
And
the
now
most bang for the buck.
Well, now everybody talks about, you know, because like, oh, it's the cloud, and we're scared of the cloud, so we're going to create a private cloud. So now there'd be this private. What's a private cloud? You know, I mean, a private cloud can't just be the VMware on your local network, right? Because you're not even on the internet at that point. You're on a local network.
It's called a LAN or a VLAN.
And but the thing is, you don't have the ubiquity, right? So you need to have some kind of what they call BC, business continuity, mm-hmm, situation, where you've got multiple data centers that all your stuff is automatically filling between, right? So when they talk about having private cloud, other than meaning like it's actually on the public cloud, i.e. the internet, but is inaccessible to outside people, or it means you've set up a network of everything that you own and control, where you're basically recreating a always-on environment, but for yourself instead of for the public.
Like a corporate network. It's just rebranding and renaming to make it sound new, I think, for the most part.
I was in a. I actually saw a presentation last week before, on software defined networking. So that's why it's like fresh in my mind. I was also somewhat thrown during it because in the group of people that were there were some like management level people and some technical people, and I was really the only like
Linux, Unix kind of person in there, like strong one. And so the guy who was giving the press stage is very charismatic, very smart guy, like knows everything to say. He can talk to any of those groups of people and do well. But at one point he said, and what was it that Linus Torvalds created 12 years ago that, like, you know, took over everything and has done, you know, done amazing well or something? And so everybody looked at me when he said that. And so I was like, oh, I'm on the spot now.
Are you going to call him out for being off on his years?
Well, that's the thing. And so I'm like, 12 years.
12 years.
And everybody's looking at me. I'm like, Git?
BitKeeper.
I said, Git? Because that's the only thing I could think of. I'm like, no, because Linux is older than that. And he's like, no, Linux.
Linux is 91.
Well, and so I was sitting there. I was like, I mean, I was kind of thrown because everybody was looking at me. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I just... But that would be like 2002. Like, I'm pretty sure Linux is older. Maybe I'm just misremembering a decade or something. And so then after the meeting, because my phone had died, after the meeting, I like went back and I started looking. And I was like, no, I was right. It was like early 90s. I mean, his first Usenet post was 91. I think the first release was maybe 92 or maybe 91. But anyway, so it's 22 years, not 12 years.
Did you call him out, or you just took the hit?
No, they were already long gone. Oh. I thought about contacting him. Like, maybe I misunderstood what you said, but if you said 12 years, you were wrong.
Yeah, it's been a while. I mean, that's the thing. Like, and it still hasn't quite taken over the desktop. Every year is going to be the year of the Linux desktop, yeah. And maybe it's going to be
I think
this
people
year,
finally but... started stop saying that.
Yeah.
I mean, there for 5 or 6 years, it was... There was a lot of gung-ho people, but
well,
I think
it's taken over.
Kinda...
It's taken over embedded. I mean, it's on the majority of devices in the world these days. You know, some form of Linux. Android is a form of Linux. You know, all these things are Linux derivatives. So yeah, it's done pretty well. It's just, you know, it, as most tech does, it's gone in a direction. As most good tech does, it's gone in a direction that no one really foresaw.
Here's a suggestion to people that want to sound like they know what they're talking about when they start talking about Linux. Don't call stuff that's Unix Linux, and don't say that something is like a Linux kernel when it's FreeBSD, because that's not Linux. And that's fine if, like, you know, you're somebody who doesn't really know and you're just like saying it and you don't know any better, but don't be like a professional who's acting like you know what you're talking about and you call something that's running FreeBSD a Linux kernel.
I prefer the Berkeley standard Linux distribution myself. Or OpenLSD.
OpenOSD?
No, that didn't work out how I thought it was going to work out. OpenBSD, we did L for instead
yeah,
of the
open,
B.
Open Linux.
It's not a drug reference.
That area down there by OST, Old Spanish Trail.
This is off topic.
Okay.
Did you hear that Burning Man... had to like
rained out
yeah got rained out for like a
because
day
because some techno hippie said, look, if this pagan stuff really offended God, he'd do something about it.
I thought that was kind of a joke, like, I, you know, Burning Man being canceled is the ultimate internet hoax.
It didn't get canceled. Right,
for a couple of days
it just rained really hard and they turned away people and they wouldn't let them drive in for like 18 hours or something.
They tried to douse Burning Man. I guess that's before it was lit.
But I also started reading articles that led me to read articles that talked about the fact that Burning Man is very popular in like the Silicon Valley area, mm-hmm. with like tech people. And,
big tech people.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, and I remember I had a friend who went to Burning Man in 98 or something, pretty long time ago. And then it definitely seemed more like a, I'm not going to say hippie, but... kind of a community kind of subculture thing. And it was kind of interesting. And I haven't kept up with Burning Man at all. Like, I used to kind of think it was interesting. I wanted to go. But then, like, just recently I started reading some article and they said that it's really gotten kind of out of control as far as, mm-hmm. basically the tech people in Silicon Valley have a bunch of money and they go there. And now it used to be like...
You packed your own stuff in.
Yeah,
you packed your own
yeah,
stuff
you,
out.
You
packed your stuff
no
in.
Money.
You had
money.
To plan
had
and
like,
scheme. And...
You had, like, you know, some beef jerky and some Kool-Aid packets or something, and that's what you, other than
quick, we
got to
find MacGyver. He'll know
drugs,
what to do.
You, like, you subsisted on, you know, tang and beef jerky or something, or whatever you brought
sand.
And could barter. But sand. Now they're saying that lots a lot of these sand. Like tech people have other people building stuff for them, and they're bringing in.
They're flying out like in their RVs, own planes.
They're outsourcing it to India.
Caravans. They've got like closed-in spaces where they fly in like nationally
tents.
Known chefs that are like cooking lobster and sushi and like all these great meals. It's like completely kind of antithetical to the idea of what Burning Man represents or represented. Anyway, that was kind of sad to read that because it does sound like it's.
That's one of those things we should have gone years ago. I think it's that ship
it's
is
kind of
sailed.
Like DEF CON.
Oh! Although it is canceled, I heard next year they've already come out in advance
true.
And said it's canceled. That's one of the cool things. They
don't show up at the Rio next year.
Of course,
year.
If somebody shows up at the Rio, it has not been paying attention.
They'll think it is canceled.
Holy crap. Somebody's gonna sincerely tweet DEF CON is canceled because it's not here.
Some of the encoded messages all around where DEF CON is canceled. Like if you put on the red glasses and look at the big welcome banner, it said DEF CON is canceled.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice. Clever. Well, you know, I'm gonna have my people get out there ahead of time and get my badge for me, and
I'm gonna have to wake up early again, aren't I?
Yeah, Silicon Valley.
I'm already tired.
All right. Well, we are approaching the end of the show, but
we
still
could do a call.
We
could
do a call or two
to
if you want
to
call in. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. I know a lot of people that have gone out to Burning Man, and I don't know. I mean, I would kind of want to go, but I don't even know now. It's like, you know, you have to buy, tickets are hard to
buy
get.
Buy tickets. You've got, like, just getting in there. I heard there's, like, the park roads queue up for hours and hours. Like, if you think, you know, standing in line is bad, imagine being in a car in the middle of the desert queuing up on park roads just trying to get in. I guess that's why, you know, we'll just get flown in with Musk and, you know, who else goes? Ellinger. Who knows?
What kind of venture capitalist would take
The Google guys.
Yeah, they go Sergey Brin and
The
other guy.
I think it's Larry Page.
Yes, yeah, it is Page. Yeah, I heard they go. There was some I guess article that says, hey, Silicon Valley does have something to offer. Look, they do this and they do this. I didn't actually read it. I don't have time to do that, but
well, somebody,
I figured there was some hubbub over IT guys being out there.
I read an article about, you know, some tech companies judge their hires based on attendance
Are you disqualified if you go or if you don't go? Yeah,
apparently you're supposed to go.
You're supposed to go.
If you're the kind of person who at least knows what it is, it qualifies you better for executive positions in some
If you know what it is, you are going through drug testing. Is how I would think a lot of Texas companies.
Oh, you came back clean. I guess we can't hire you.
Nope. You earn it, Burning Man.
Yeah, you know, even that kind of bled into a crime drama that was on one of like TNT or something, Murder in the First. So the storyline was that this guy who was kind of a tech startup billionaire young guy who killed a woman, broke probation and went out to Burning Man. But he was in one of the, it was that kind of deal. He was in a prefab, you know, air conditioned camper and had sushi brought in and was living the high life, watching all the hippies dance around naked. At Burning Man, so it's kind of a precursor to all the news stories that have been out about that kind of thing going on right now. All right, so maybe that's why we don't have any calls tonight. Everybody's out at Burning Man, finally getting let in after the rainstorms have dissipated.
We're doing our own Burning Man in a week. Only clothes are kind of mandatory.
You
don't
really
want to see you in a
heat cap
or clothes.
You'll burn, all right.
It will be warm, probably early part of the night. Cohen may actually have stuff on fire, although it may be too hot for that.
When it's wintertime and cold, he'll burn stuff. I'm sure we could talk him into lighting a fire or two if we wanted to. You know, we could just mention to him that we should light something. But I don't know. 713-526-573 if you want to get in under the wire here.
We'll bring in some LED flames is what we'll do. We can do our little mini Burning Man with like an LED panel.
Can you make
flames.
A device?
Yeah, I can do that.
Can you make a device that anytime somebody says Burning Man, it like puts a fire on a screen?
No. How about we just always have the fire on the screen and assume that somewhere in the world someone's saying Burning Man?
Somewhere.
It's that sensitive. It knows.
There's a, speaking of that kind of serendipity, there's a website, I think it's called, it's off Spotify. I think it's Spotify, but it was a serendipity or synchronicity or something. But anyway, it showed you in real time, anytime the same song was playing in two different locations.
Oh, that's kind of crazy.
So it would, if two people were listening to Bohemian Rhapsody at the same time, it would show those on a map.
So I think the one cool thing about mass surveillance is that eventually we could do like a map that shows me every two cars whose windshield wipers are in sync. Because, you know, we get total surveillance. That'll be pretty easy to pick out. There'll be some nice little silver linings to being in a surveillance state. I bet that happens a lot more than people think.
Well, I'm always like sitting in at the left hand turn lane, waiting to see when the blinkers get in sync.
Yeah, that's what I'm. Yeah. Ooh, maybe with Google Cars, if we finally have self driving cars that communicate, they will always be in sync. There we go. Is that happy?
Yeah. It actually plays a snippet of the song that they're listening to.
Oh, okay. So it jumps around.
It's just kind of a hypnotizing little map and it scrolls around.
What is that?
It's Spotify. It shows you it shows you anytime two people are listening to the same song anywhere in the world. It shows you shows you music twins.
It's like being in a car with someone that's never happy with the radio station they're listening to.
But you could pause it and actually listen to the song, which is interesting. What would be cool is if it would show you anytime somebody else in the world was listening to the same song you were listening to. That would be useful in a completely useless sort of way. All right. Well, we are winding down here, running out of time, and we got to get to that 4-minute mark so we can play the outro music and say our goodbyes. We still have time to take a call or two if you want to be on the air. We've got that time. 713-526-5738 is the number to call. We've got everybody here in the studio standing by. We've talked about Burning Man. We've talked about Doctor Who. We've talked about...
I think we should talk about software-defined networks more because, you know...
Talked about the cloud.
That's being facetious. Yeah, sorry.
Software-defined networks?
Yeah, that's what Flick did with little mini rant earlier.
Yeah. Not so many. That's his ongoing rant.
I think we need software-defined 4D printing. Is what's next. That's
I think Flickton needs to walk around with a permanent whiteboard, and anytime anyone ever asks him what the cloud is, he just draws a cloud on it.
Why don't you have a cloud t-shirt? That'd be all just a white t-shirt with a little black cloud on it.
I don't like to wear white t-shirts.
Then you could say, I'm in the cloud.
Oh, God. Yeah.
You thought about it. It was funny. So you could be in the cloud. I'm in the cloud.
Maybe I could do it with a black or dark gray shirt.
All right. Who all here has done the ice bucket challenge?
How many?
Who all here has blocked ice bucket challenge from their Twitter feed?
How many have been challenged to do it?
I've been challenged and I've done it.
I actually have been challenged twice.
And you haven't done it?
And I haven't done it.
Who here forwards chain letters? Sorry. I think it's been entertaining. There have been some celebrity ones that have been entertaining.
Over $50 million.
And I think that's actually pretty good, too, getting the awareness up for ALS.
Most likely, I probably will have to end up doing it, but...
I thought you were in proximity. Did you dump water on someone else's head, or was that Jack Potts? I thought you were involved.
Jack Potts did it with his kids, right?
Yeah, and I did it. Like, what happened was... Somebody challenged the Peace family, right? So I'm like, well, I'm not included, so I did the dumping.
Didn't you just got married?
And but then they challenged the Potts, and then so then they did it. But then one of the Potts kids challenged me.
Counter challenge.
Yeah, and then I also got challenged by someone else. So I've got two challenges. Maybe they cancel each other out if you get challenged.
They might.
Twice.
No, I think so.
I think they just add up.
No, I think they do. I think they cancel out.
Can you trade them? Like, you know, like, hey, here's a mark for this guy. I think Patrick Stewart had a pretty decent one.
His
was very classy. The classiest of all. I think.
Did you
so
see
far.
The compilation of the fails?
Yes. I've seen a few. The main thing is just dump. Make sure that here's the thing. 100 pounds of water coming down on you when it breaks over your head as water, that can make for a funny video. If you don't manage to get the water out of the vessel, that's a 100-pound vessel coming down on your head. I'm surprised no one's broken a neck so far.
Yeah,
like there have been a couple. Yeah. We never saw them get up in a couple of those videos.
Yeah.
So,
there were a couple of them. Who knows? It looked like they probably were hurt. The one was hilarious where the guy had the bucket and he poured it and then the bucket went on his head. and then he fell over.
Yeah, read up on physics and how buckets work just a little bit before you attempt this. Also,
why hasn't there been a walrus bucket challenge?
Oh,
my bucket.
Who can get to Photoshop first?
My bucket.
Oh, yes. That is genius. Someone's going to have to go do that now.
Know your memes.
Know your memes.
Yo, see, I watched Jay's. Jay's was nice.
I thought it was at least.
Yeah, yours and Cynthia's was
tried
cool.
Tried to be clever. All right, so time is running out. Phones are dead.
Actually, there was. It's probably not. It's a little on the morbid side to speak about. I think there was a death. I think a Scottish teenager jumped into a deep body of water that was supposed to be really chilly and did not make it back out like a day ago. So it's claimed a life so far. Yeah, that wasn't fun. Huh. Yay! Can we have something more fun?
Are you serious? Or are you just
no? I'm serious. Out? Yeah, totally serious. I mean, no one, I don't think, to my knowledge, no one has been taken by owling or by planking so far. So, I mean, we're definitely upping the dangerous level, you know. Well, I guess there was a cinnamon challenge. I'm sure people had a hard time with that. I guess there's not a peanut challenge going around for obvious
reasons.
You're
familiar with the Four Loco.
That was not an official internet challenge. That's also not something people want to see on the internet, I would assume. Yes, we challenge you to show up next Friday without ice water.
And don't dump buckets of ice water on
No buckets of anything. Buckets of Wi-Fi will take. That's about it.
Bit buckets.
Bit buckets. Yeah. Bring code.
All right. Well, we are going to go ahead and get ready to start playing the outro music and get our way out of here. So 713-526-5738 is no longer a valid number to call, but you can save that number and maybe call it next week.
You can still talk to Groovehouse.
Hmm. Or the next show.
Probably not. The next show.
Yeah.
Just call in and ask some computer questions. Or
you,
don't.
You know,
don't.
Sometimes he has open forum, so you can call and ask about whatever if he doesn't have a theme.
All right. Well, cue the outro music. Or is it too early? I know it's not too early.
It's still about a little bit early. Well. We could just sit here and not say anything.
Well, you have been listening to Technology Bites. We're here every Wednesday night. We're glad that both of you tuned in this evening.
Thanks for the 3 calls we got.
Hey, my mom might have been listening. That's 4 people. Yeah. Flick his mom. That's 5.
Does not bode well for
our
future.
Arbitron numbers have got to be booming.
Does not bode well for future fundraisers. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in. I'm Jay Lee.
Peter Hughes is not connected.
All right. Perfect. Show.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Baron.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll see you next week for more Technology Bites.
Election Day is coming, November 4th, and so is the deadline to register to vote. To vote in a Harris County election, you must be registered to vote at least 30 days before the election date. To change your name and address, a completed and signed application is also required. Photo ID is required in Texas to vote. Accepted photo IDs include current driver's licenses, passports, and military IDs. Get more details at harrisvotes.org. To find out how to register to vote, you can visit hctax.net/voter/registration. Again, that's hctax.net/voter/registration. Exercise your right to vote. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Many companies will match gifts made to nonprofit organizations. A matching gift from your company will help KPFT preserve independent music, arts, news, and views for generations to enjoy. Participating in your company's matching gift program is as easy as 1, 2, 3. Step 1, make a gift to KPFT. Pledge today at kpft.org. Step 2, contact your human resources office for eligibility requirements and to obtain a matching gift form. Many companies match the gifts of retirees, spouses, and surviving spouses. Step 3. Fill out the employee portion of the form completely. Send the form to KPFT, attention, matching gifts, at 419 Lovett, Houston, Texas, 77006. Your gift to KPFT could double if your company has a matching gift program. Help out your community radio station today. This is